Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by Hera Friedlander.
Hi.
How Hello. Are you doing today?
Good. I'm disappointed no one can see my jazz hands
when they I were
welcome
solid,
myself.
Solid jazz hands. That's what we call on Scoppy Radio podcast gold.
Because like air quotes are podcast gold.
Yeah, any strong visual cue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great for us. We enjoyed them.
Absolutely.
So I'm really glad that you're here, because we were mentioning this before we started recording, but so the upcoming project that you're working on is with Non-Op, Open Opera Works, right? Okay, good. I'm just making sure I got the subtitle right. Yeah, and it's this frontier feminist project. And I am so glad, because I've worked with Non-Op a few times with you, and that's actually how I met you. Yeah, and it's a lot of people don't know about Non-Op. A lot of people do, but it's super fun to get to kind of chat about what that's about. But we can get to that. But I'd love to kind of hear about the concept of this project specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. So Frontier Feminist is kind of my baby. They were like, would you like to organize a feed salon around some theme of your choosing? And for better or worse, I said yes. For better, of course, for better.
Absolutely for better.
But yeah, so recently, so I did, you know, undergrad and grad school, because I'm a master of music.
Me too.
We're all really good. Yeah. We're really important.
I'm not a master of music. I'm a bachelor.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
I'm just a bachelor.
Like the TV show?
Just like the TV show.
I'd watch that, The Bachelor of Music.
I think it's just pimply, sweatpants wearing... sweaty people
playing tuba
on two nights of sleep.
It's just a bunch of people in practice rooms avoiding each other.
Yeah,
for sure. Oh, and you got a cat.
I have a cat. No. Anywho, about Frontier Feminist. So yeah, I spent years learning about learning a lot of music for recitals and performances, and it was mostly by old dead white guys.
What?
I know. There's so few of them. I was amazed at the amount I was introduced to at school.
Right, yeah.
But then I got out and I was like, I should look at more mainstream composers, like some ladies or whatever, because I am one of those. And yeah, so I started off with just a Google of female composers in general. And that was... this is my favorite.
So one of the projects, so for folks that don't know, what we're all reacting to right now is the cat. And just kind of getting that out there. And so one of the things I've been doing lately is listening to a lot of old episodes, because I'm working on turning them into articles. And we have writers that do that too. I've mentioned this on the show. But what's fun is how often this happens, of just the instant informality maker of the cat. It's something that we used to really adore and call out on the show and be like, yeah, it's just part of our aesthetic. And I think now we've kind of gotten to the point where it's you know.
They're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so sorry.
Just
I'm glad
movable
to...
movable furniture.
Right,
yeah, movable
right.
feast. Okay, so yes. So started researching female composers just more for my own edification than any specific goal. And then there were so many of them. So many in the world as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And then in America throughout history. And then living in America today. And so what I really wanted to do for this salon was highlight some of the works of living female composers, particularly living female composers who had adapted the works of other women. Because also there's a lot of amazing works by women that use text by men,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And I'm sure they provide all these subtleties and layers to that. But, you know, it's also nice when ladies are highlighting the voices of ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And just through happenstance, there were a bunch of song cycles about female explorers. And so I was like, oh, well, that's really cool. They've got these women who were some of the first settlers of Alaska or the first settlers of Nebraska, back when it was really cool to explore the wilds of Nebraska.
Are we about to talk about Willa Cather right now?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wait. I love Willa Cather. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. No, that might be more your purview, because I know the text of the songs and the plot of My Antonia, but as far as specifics go...
Yeah, I mean, I took a... and I mean, it's now been 3 years since I took this course, but in my master's degree, I had like extra credits, so I took an English lit grad course, which was just like such a weird, because like I'd taken some in my undergrad English lit courses, and so then I took American female authors in the 20th century, so like a lot of Black authors, which was really cool, yeah. Like Anne Petrie, like Jamaica Kincaid, but yeah, one of them, the first one we did was Willa Cather's My Antonia, and it's so is that, because the reason why, yeah. I was like, oh, this is totally what, because is it the Libby Larson setting?
Yes.
Cool, mm-hmm. very cool. Yeah, yeah, I think it's one of those are just like one of those unnoticed gems, and like the book is really, really well written, and so if you haven't, check out My Antonia, it's a really great book, novel. But anyway, sorry.
And also a really cool song cycle.
Yeah,
just want snippets of the novel without having to invest in a lot of time, you can just listen to My Antonia by Libby Larson.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then we also have more Libby Larson because she's amazing. She adapted a bunch of letters of Calamity Jane to her daughter, or letters allegedly written, mm-hmm. by Calamity Jane to her daughter, since allegedly is like the new word of the day in our culture, yeah. all the time. Because of... Calamity Jane was apparently illiterate. Oh. But, yeah. But then some woman popped out of the woodwork in the 40s, I think, and was trying to get, old age dispensation from the government. Welfare?
Mm-hmm.
Words. I don't know. It was whatever it was in the 40s. And she was like, oh, and by the way, Calamity Jane was my mother. Here are these letters that she wrote to me.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're still really cool songs, really cool letters, whether they were written by her or not. I'm sure they capture the spirit of her life.
Yeah.
And apparently most of what we know about her life was made up anyways,
yeah.
by her.
Yeah, that's a super interesting thing, right? Because, like, actually, the thing I'm thinking about now, too, and not to, like, immediately bring it back to the thing I know, but with Cather, like, My Antonia is all told from the story, the perspective of Jim? Or my point is, though, like a white boy, like, and but it's written by Cather, and so it's like super interesting that when you start like kind of getting into, it's the concept of like frontier feminism is super or frontier feminist, sorry, is super interesting to me because of the fact that
frontier
like,
feminism.
Well, I mean, and I think that kind of like is what I'm thinking about is just like. And a lot of history in the early 1900s America is this way, where it's like reminiscences of, rather than like extremely detailed, accurate reporting.
Mm-hmm.
That's super interesting to me. So like, what's that kind of been like from an artistic perspective?
I feel like it gives us a lot of freedom because there was a sense that these words were people creating their own narratives and their own stories sort of based around their experiences, but also you have the literal experience and then you have sort of building off of that their perception of themselves in different circumstances. And sorry, I'm trying to like put all these thoughts together.
No, for sure. It's like a, well, and I think the other thing that's really interesting kind of looking at it from a, like, I feel like centrists would call it a postmodernist lens of, like, we're looking at things that are creations in a male-dominated space. Mm-hmm. Like, literature is very much a male-dominated space. And, like, a lot of writers worked to...
just futzing, I apologize.
Sorry, no, you're fine. A lot of female writers had to work in a male-dominated space, mm-hmm. and so they had to filter the work that they were doing through that lens. And in a lot of ways, we're, like, unpacking now what that actually means, and that's hard to... It's hard to verbalize that. It's hard to, like, come to grips with that. And that's why this kind of work is so crucial, mm-hmm. because that's exactly what you're doing, is, like, trying to pull back those layers, you know?
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, is in sort of researching the authors of the text, particularly Willa Cather and Mary Oliver, who's a mm-hmm. poet... who some of her works were adapted by Laurie Lateman, and we're doing a few of those, is some of the, like, retrospective critiques of them are very critical of their lack of a, like, stolid feminist viewpoint. But there's some nobility in what they did, because I think My Antonia is from a male perspective, granted, but, like, Mary Oliver's poems are very, they're very truthful and very honest to her experience. And while she's not explicitly saying anything about, like, this is exactly where I think my sexuality lies in the political spectrum or the social spectrum, she is unabashedly, you know, utilizing her voice to express something. And I think the same can be said with Willa Cather, even though it is this male perspective. One, there's a lot of research done about, like, her sexuality and, like, where she saw herself, but it was also early 1900s American society, so.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing that is really powerful is when you're able to take that work and put it in context. And I also, you know, and I'm not, I think I've heard the Larson settings twice. Tierra Burge, a good friend of mine, and I think she's been on the show, saying that I've heard her sing them. And I'm trying to remember now how the texts, what parts of the text is that, is it setting? Is it Antonia's words or is it,
It picks a lot of different portions of the novel. So the ones that we're focusing on are actually, it's landscape number 2 colon winter, which is very apropos for Chicago right now, but it's a combination of the narrator's perspective and also Antonia's experiences through the lens of the landscape. So the landscape actually takes primacy in this setting and sort of how that affects and shapes their lives. So it's more about that than about sort of the specific internal experiences of a person. But, you know, the song begins, winter comes down savagely on little towns on the prairie. And it's sort of a miniature narrative about how this family breaks apart in light of a really terrible Nebraskan winter.
Wow.
Yeah, so one of the people we've had on the show, Corey Smith.
Yeah.
Did this performance art work called The New Prairie School. And so this reminds me super much of that. It reminds me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because I think in a lot of ways, when you think of the Midwest, you think of the lakes and you think of, but the prairie is like also very much like part of the Midwest, but it's not something that we think about like mythologically. And that's what I think, like, Cather did so well was create that, you know, that she created that story. Like, because that's the winter for Nebraskans meant, like, because Antonia in the novel, she's an immigrant from Romania. I'm not sure, but she's from, like the what you would call, oh, this is a slur. I was going to say, I'm not going to say it, but the what the housing Facebook group used to be called.
The politically the good term is she's probably Romani.
Yeah, right. So that is like a super, and so they didn't have, so they like immigrated that year and then didn't have the understanding of how to get through a prairie winter. And that's like such an interesting like thing to, that is so uniquely a Nebraskan thing that like I'd never thought of as a East Coast fuck from Florida, you know. Anyway, sorry, I'm like I gotta stop nerding out about Cather and like we should talk about,
yeah, we got other bitches over here.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's not progressive.
Oh, who cares?
I mean, it's your privilege, you could definitely
So actually what you said about Calamity Jane, this is a total tangent, but in just speaking of women creating their own mythologies, I was bored at work the other day and was tired of getting work done on my computer and decided to grab a book to read. I work at a cafe. It's not like, I don't like work at an office. And I'm like, I'm done with this work now. I'm going to read a book instead. No, but there are just kind of like random books lying around. And one of them is it was called something like The Philosophy of Coco Chanel or something like that. Coco Chanel had a really interesting life. The very, very early part of it, it turns out was very sad. Like she was orphaned and she was like this kind of like, she was like the least popular girl at her orphanage. So she was, like, alone a lot at an orphanage. Oh. Yeah, oh. I know. And but, so then she, when she was old enough, she left the orphanage and then, like, worked at a, I don't know, she just, like, worked these odd jobs. And, no, she was a singer at a cafe. And then this rich guy came.
So she's Edith Piaf. They're all the same, right?
Yeah, yeah. So she was singing at this cafe, but she was a really bad singer. But she was, like, very, she had, like, a very unique look. So this rich guy was like, yo, you're bad at this. Do you want to come hang out at my estate instead? And she was like, okay. But so at a certain point, she started making clothes, blah, 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 blah. But once she kind of became known and everyone was like, who is she? This new woman on the scene. She just straight up lied. She just completely made up her life story. And, like, it took a really long time to kind of, like, actually figure out the truth. And, yeah. Like, even in the book when they were talking about her early life, they're like, she was born between 18-something and 18-something, and we think this is what happened to her mother, and we think she was in this orphanage from this time, and, you know, like, by all accounts was very unpopular and very lonely, and we think she left the orphanage here, and it's just, yeah. Like, and
it's because it's, like, it's almost like a marketing scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Because no one's gonna buy fine, expensive clothing from the saddest person at the orphanage. No,
exactly. The least cool, the lamest kid at the orphanage.
I would buy that clothing. That's my aesthetic. I wanna ask about, because the thing that's super interesting with all of this is, like, kind of recognizing that, like, in a lot of ways, I feel like classical musicians are, like, craving finding what is truly American, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think that when we, especially when you come from a very traditional artistic experience, and we come from European practices that are so deeply rooted in mythology from thousands of years ago, because you can track European history. People that live in Europe can track their history back without having to think about immigration, without having to address slavery, without having to address, like, major, like, diasporic traditions for folks that are of that experience. But so, like, my point here being is that it's super interesting to me to kind of think about, like, how people that want to create art that references their history can do that. And I think that's super interesting. I think it's harder for folks like you that find themselves in the position of being like, mm-hmm. I want to find women from my country. And so I'm curious, like, for you, if that was an experience that you had, that difficulty, and what was the moment where you were like, oh, wait, no, wait, here's a theme. Like, here is kind of like a thing that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, it started out as just a general search of women that went to American women. But even then, if you're looking for adaptations of text by female speakers and writers, I'm sure there's a ton out there. There's so much that hasn't been recorded.
Right.
And so that, you know, I felt terrible having to just, like, let some stuff go. But I was like, I don't have time to go through and
right.
play everything with my limited keyboard skills anyways and figure out if I like this or not. But also, you know, like Emily Dickinson, for instance, is a fantastic poet. I do love me some Dickinson. But, like, there are other voices besides hers, but she's one of the most prominent women to adapt their text because, mm-hmm. one, there's such a wealth and breadth of it. And I think for a while, I'm sure that was, like, very avant-garde to say, oh, there's this woman who spent most of her life caged away and no one knows her work, so we'll adapt it. But now, at this point, it's like, okay, it's another Dickinson song cycle.
The thought of singing a Dickinson song cycle is, like, the most boring thing that I could possibly do.
Well, it lives in a really interesting space because I feel like post, like, I don't know when Dickinson settings really started. Maybe, actually, when did Dickinson settings really start? Do you know?
I'm trying to think, because it seems like,
I mean, is the 70s too late?
That's too late. They started in the early 1900s, probably.
Yeah, and then I'm sure she, like anyone, she had her, like, lull, and then, like, back in the 90s, Previn did his cool jazzy cycle for Renee, mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So occasionally someone will be like, oh, sure, it's Dickinson, but I've added a musical theater element, or, like, I've added a saxophone, and now it's new again.
I'm just waiting for, like minimalist, like, phasing loop pedal Dickinson.
yeah. Well, and I think, I guess my point, though, is that at some point, some well-meaning male-dominated space creator was like, let's bring a woman in. And so they brought right. Dickinson in. And then they were like, okay, we're good now. We've got the token woman. And I think that's an interesting thing, you know, and I think it really, like, speaks to a lot of experiences that we're going through now, where it's like, oh, we've got diversity covered, you know, like, we're good, like, let's get back to the bread and butter, you know. And I
even looking at, you know, sort of the, not rep list, what is it called, when a season for an orchestra or something, it'll be, you know, your Dvorak, your Beethoven, your Bach, if you're feeling a little crazy and you want to have a Baroque orchestra, and mm-hmm. then, like, one piece by...
If that.
Maybe, yeah. If they're really trying, by one of the, like, main female composers. I'm trying to think, like, Amy Beach's symphony. I feel like that's commonly done.
Yeah.
This is really... Here. So, like, something that we've definitely talked about on the show before was my most recent editorial, where, like, we talked about, like... season programs, and it's like, yeah, like, it's absurd. Like, the Mets most recent is like 28 out of 28 are all male composers. Mm-hmm. 28 out of 28 are all male conductors. And it's like, these are not,
the CSO season is all men too.
It's like, not, you know what I was watching today, and this is like such a tangent, but I was watching Hollywood Reporter interviews. There's a, like, roundtable discussion with, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda and, like, mm-hmm. Donald Glover and, like, Issa Rae from HBO and the guy who did La La Land. And so then I kind of, like, was like, you know when you have a YouTube series and you're like, this could be a potential rabbit hole? Do you ever have that experience where you're like, I could totally just, like, binge watch this entire... I was on the precipice of it, and then I, like, looked at all of the rest of the videos, and it was, like, 10-person roundtables where they were all men. And, like... like, exciting and interesting men like Mark Ruffalo and, like, Samuel Jackson.
Why do you lead with exciting, interesting men like Mark Ruffalo?
I don't know. I guess I meant to say, like...
He perfected the dad bod and dad chic to an extent that no other man has yet.
He is a perfect specimen!
I guess I'm just saying, like...
Mark Ruffalo!
I mean, yeah.
The greatest Hulk ever, Eric Bannum. Get out of here.
I think he's got that, like, he has a Tumblr and all. And so people love to, like, quote him as, like, he's the, like, oh, yeah, he's progressive because it's Mark Ruffalo and he has a Tumblr. And it's like, oh, all right. But I guess my point here is that,
well,
like.
Well, you clearly think he's cool.
He's
the first person who came to mind when you thought of an interesting man.
Well, and here's why it's relevant. No, because he was the one that showed up first. And so one of my point is that I feel like the Hollywood Reporter was like, oh, we need to get, like, cool people, you know? Like, we need to get, like, I don't know. I don't remember the other people that were in them. All I remember is Mark Ruffalo's face and Samuel L. Jackson's face, and then, like, a bunch of other dudes. Like, videos and videos of just roundtables of dudes. And, like, I guess that ultimately, I don't really know where I'm going with this. But I just, I think it's super interesting. I think it's super valuable when that we, like, find these works. And it's relevant to recent discussions we have now, where I think it's super important that for folks that are programming, mm-hmm. for folks that are working administratively, you know, like, the exciting thing to me about your project is that you are programming it. The exciting, like, you're able to go and say, I want to have a breath here, you know, rather than just, like, a program being done where it's like, oh, well, we just got to, like, hit our bases.
Right. And so it was both the refreshing and terrifying thing. You know, it's sort of like flashbacks to having to put together a recital for undergrad or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Although then you had a voice teacher to sort of be like, well, remember the 4A set you were working on?
Yeah.
So this was, and sort of also going back to like how I found these particular authors, it was just going through and looking for, on the most basic level, it was like music by whoever, Barbara Harbach, but then looking at text by, and literally just doing that for all the female composers on like the Northwestern Library pages, and looking at the text and just writing down all those pieces, and then trying to sort of narrow that into a theme, which is how I ended up with the Frontier Feminist.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a lot of like, I'm not sure that this exists before you started? Or did you, do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. is that a thought that came at all, or?
Well, the main thing, so Frontier Feminist came after I found the pieces, because I knew I wanted it to be an evening of works by contemporary American women. I just didn't know exactly how it would be shaped, because I didn't want to just throw a bunch of works at people and hope that they remembered them. You know, it's always, it's nice when there's a theme. You feel like hugged by a conceptual idea.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's like a, it's a thesis that writes itself.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I think that there is merit to just presenting really good music, but I'm too much of a control freak to just present people with quality music and let them take their own ideas away. I mean, I think we have allowed people room, because it's not just to be like, you should be a feminist and you should respect all women trying new things. It's also, hopefully you're inspired by this to try new things in your own life, male or female, and explore new frontiers, literally, spiritually.
Yeah, and I think I wanna come back to this, but I think that the reason why I'm like hitting so hard about understanding what this process has been like for you, and is something that I should have probably talked about before 25 minutes into the interview, but thinking about kind of like the space that Non-Op provides and the space that Intuit provides, which is Intuit is Chris's project, right? Too with
actually, so surprise, this one is not at Intuit even. Oh. Although Intuit is a really fantastic space.
Yeah.
So shout out to Intuit, because they present outsider art, which basically means it's people who didn't get formal schooling
right.
to create art.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Intuit's really cool.
Oh, is that why it's Intuit? Because it's intuition rather than education?
Oh, I guess so.
We at some point, Well, the thing that's super interesting is, like, so the Intuit, that when we were at Intuit for Feed, for, so I'm gonna like, do the thing that we did before the interview started, which is kind of, like, for folks that maybe don't know the timeline of kind of, like, how Non-Op has worked. I know that, I don't know, do you remember if the Bridgeport was the first, the Bridgeport Arts Center project was the first experience that you had with Thunder Perfect Mind? Wasn't there one before that that was like Suspension,
I'm trying to think, because I was at Bridgeport the first time I ever worked with Non-Op. I'm trying to remember if that was as a part of Thunder Perfect Mind, or if that was... Basically, Non-Op is sort of nomadic in spirit,
right.
which is where the Open Opera Works comes from, because they just seek to create like really site-specific immersive experiences that can't just be categorized as opera or theater or music. And I know that they had done something with Thunder Perfect Mind before I even became involved with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they collaborated with a soprano who can do silks and sing. And so I don't think that was at Bridgeport, unless they have a...
No, right, because they had the video of her doing it from the previous experience. So then most likely, and if I start getting into this and I say something that's wrong, just correct me. But the thing that I remember is working on the Thunder Perfect Mind, kind of like, it was kind of more of a... There was like a workshop experience, and then we performed it in Bridgeport, but it was with the splayed out piano.
Yes.
And that was kind of like the main... there were a bunch of other facets to it. They had string players like sitting on chairs. I don't know if I knew you even at this point.
I don't think you did. This, I think, was August of 2015, or maybe like October of 2015.
Yeah, that sounds right. So I think we just met. But anyway, not that that matters. I mean, it does matter. But anyway. So that is what I remember from that experience. And it was super, that was very much like getting my,
So you're being kind of vague about the description here. As someone who was not there.
I'm really glad
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, and maybe you can kind of relate to my experience with this. And my point here ultimately is trying to verbalize how much of a blank canvas non-op can create. And so in that way, my first experience with Bridgeport, with non-op was at Bridgeport. And Bridgeport, for those that don't know, are these kind of open studios. And so what they'd done is they took a piano and they took the strings from inside a piano and stretched them across the studio and across the room. And they had percussionists that were familiar with, that had worked with this instrument, play pitches. They also had fixed media. So Christopher Pressings, the composer and head and founder of non-op.
Yes.
Okay, good. I want to make sure I get all the titles.
Artistic director.
Right.
All of the head titles apply to him, basically.
He is a composer, and it seems like his, one of his many, media type styles is fixed media and percussion and sound. And so that's very much what Thunder Perfect Mind was. And it was also bringing in, you know, I was part of like a six-person choir, and then you were the soloist going through, it was the like embodiment of this mind of, I'm trying to remember the character's name.
Yeah, so I think technically at that point I was Eve. So Thunder Perfect Mind all comes from some text that I can't actually, I don't remember the title of the overarching text, and maybe it is Thunder Perfect Mind. But it basically tells the story of an angelic figure coming from heaven, which is what the Silks projection person was, the footage that was pre-existing of a woman singing and being suspended on silks, and then her coming to Earth and sort of experiencing the dirty messiness of Earth.
Right.
And so there were a bunch of sort of abstract elements to represent that. So that version of Thunder Perfect Mind, there wasn't even a linear story. It was more moments of chaos where at one point everyone was just walking around sort of muttering sounds.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where, you know, as we're both trying to verbalize, like, it was one of the most satisfying performing experiences I've ever had. And it's something that I'll never forget what it was like to be in that experience. But it's also like, yeah, like, I super can't describe to you what it is that we did. Because, like, it was more about, and so kind of all of this is to say that, you know, when the what we've talked about so far with you is just kind of like figuring out how to program and theme this project, but also like the power of having such a something we talked about with LaRob when we talked about with Hearing in Color. So I don't know if you know this, but Hearing in Color is a project that we do where we reach out to artists of color to program performances. And something that we're trying to figure out how to verbalize, but is the idea of a platform that doesn't have like predetermined structures, and like it bringing structures into that platform is welcome, but the idea that giving an artist just artistic license, and that's something that, is both not frequently done and is daunting. Like it, and so I'm kind of, is that an experience that you, that kind of like how, what is that a thing that's come into play for you or?
Yeah, because it was like, you have the ability to say something and people are going to come and hear it.
Yeah.
And they have to pay money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hear your opinion on a matter. And so yes, that's still scary, and it will be scary until after the dinner next Tuesday or next Saturday. Wow, whatever day it's happening. Saturday, April 7th.
Nice.
Plug. And also because the space, too, that we're at now, it's 3031 North Rockwell, which it is a giant warehouse. It is a beautiful warehouse, but it is just a big empty space, and they were like, just fill it with whatever.
Yeah.
Like, just go. Let us know what it is so we can start advertising for it, but...
What's the name of this space? It's just an empty warehouse?
As of now, it's 3031 North Rockwell.
And it's just like, that's... I guess that's kind of like... the reason why I've taken so long to try to get to what this is because I can't verbalize what that means to an artist. Or, like, so frequently do we talk to someone where it's like, oh, yeah, like, this is just a canvas, like, a blank. And that's mm-hmm. sometimes the most, like, I mean, even visual artists talk about this. Like, the idea of just, like, sitting and looking at white. Sitting and looking at empty. Mm-hmm. Like, that is so... such an interesting thought, and something that classical musicians don't, I mean, short of, you know, your senior recital or your master's recital, you don't sit with
very well, but often. Even then, like, there are requirements that you have to hit, like, sure, in yeah. my undergrad, you needed to have four languages represented, and it couldn't all be arias, and I mean, you know, those are pretty open guidelines, because within those, there's just, like, a million combinations of what mm-hmm. you could do, but I mean, even that, it's not entirely a blank canvas. Can you, I mean, yeah, that's, I honestly can't imagine doing that.
Well, so let's, like, kind of progress through this process talk, which, so for you, what are the things that you've kind of found as things to latch onto, and what are some of the things that you hope the audience gleans?
So I guess one of the big things is it is about frontier feminists. That is sort of the through line. Those are the voices that everyone will hear. But it's also so much about exploration in general. So with this, like, vast empty space that we have, I'm trying as well to create, to, like, take the audience on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
Both aurally and literally, we have projections going through the whole thing, so while you're eating, you can be, like, immersed in whatever environment you happen to be hearing about, which I'm sure Alaska will be so refreshing after winter.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. Let me think. Also, putting together thoughts. But also, so we have taking everyone on a journey, letting people hear these voices. Sorry, what was the question again?
Sure, no. So, basically, like, thinking of my thing was the way that I asked the question was asking about, like, what do you hope the audience gleans, and what are some kind of, like, things that you've latched onto. And basically what I'm getting at is, you know, what are there guideposts that you've put in place for yourself, like the theme, like, and I like saying, like, the, like, really superficial way of this question is, like, what are the themes being presented?
Right.
And kind of, like, expounding on them. But I feel that there's probably way more detail to that. So I was just trying to, like... But also, yeah. Like, that can make a question hard to understand.
Yeah. So, we have the very basic theme of frontier feminist. And so, like, the most important thing to me was just to have this music heard. It's, like, barely... towing the ocean of music by women in America, but just getting anything out there. And so we're trying to, you know, represent both composers everyone's heard of, like Lori Laitman and Libby Larson, and also right. some who are less popular, like Judith, or not less popular, but less well-known, like Judith Cloud and Barbara Harbach.
Mm.
And they also come from very different compositional styles too. Like Barbara Harbach is much more lyrical and melodic. Libby Larson does have some very lyrical pieces. The ones we're presenting are a lot more narrative and structure, and very much adhere to sort of the way people speak. They're almost like very ornate recitative.
Gotcha.
But also, so we're getting the music out there, but it's also to inspire people to activism in their own lives. And whether that is just simply being active and being like, wow, Alaska and Nebraska look really cool. I guess I'll probably go to Nebraska because that's a lot closer. But, you know, whether it's inspiring them to travel in their own lives or to try and promote the causes of women, they're like, oh, I see that there are all these voices that I don't know, and maybe there are more. And we actually have representatives from the Chicago chapter of the National Organization of Women who will be present to, you know, facilitate any inclinations of people who may be invigorated by the evening. Mm-hmm. And they'll also, I think, be registering people to vote as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So get out there and vote.
Nice. Well, no, and I think the reason why I kind of wanted to ask you about this from that angle is because, like, my experience of seeing you work and seeing you perform, you are very adventurous, and the things that you do well are very sporadic. Not sporadic, that's not the word. That's why I took so long to say it, because that was the word I didn't want to say. But eclectic, like, the thing, what I'm saying is that, like, you know, I know that you've done some, like, Baroque work and, like, traditional work, but also, like, Thunder Perfect Mind was not an easy score, and you, like, really shined through it. And I think that that is a needed aspect to this. And so thinking about things that are boundary pushing in a way that instills comfort, mm-hmm. is super powerful. And like, I very much appreciate, like, your outlook on that, and kind of the way in which you program, and in the way in which it sounds like you've programmed this work. And so, you know, I think that, yeah, I mean, I guess my point is like, these kind of spaces, like performance art and artistic spaces, can be so daunting to enter because of the fact that they're so, like, the influences are so varied and they're mm-hmm. so expansive. But the idea of structure and the idea of through line, it still exists, right? I mean,
yeah, and like, even if it's something like throwing a bunch of images at people and letting them put them together in their own way, you know, if they get something totally different out of the evening than I intended in my mind, as long as it's something positive for them and they're not like, oh, I think I hate all women, I don't think anyone will go away with that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like, I don't care. Make your own evening out of it. Mm-hmm. Enjoy food, go home, and just, like, sleep well. That's fine, as long as you, like, hear the music and take away something, even if it's totally different from my proposed intention.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been talking a lot about the food. I want to, or the fact that there is food. I would love to talk about kind of, so the evening, the structure in which this is being performed is called Feed.
Yes.
So let's talk about the fact that there's food.
Yes. Oh no, that is one of the most important parts. So there, not only is there food, but there is a beer pairing with every course.
Nice.
Yeah, so the food is,
oh, I do remember that.
Oh yeah. And it's Middlebrow Brewing again, Middlebrow Brewery. Oh, that's hard to say. And they're a local Chicago microbrewery, and I'm super picky about beer, and, like, even I've managed to find beers I like from them, so that says, well, I don't know if that says more about them or me, but regardless. And then also, the food is Eric May's Easy Eats, and it's inspired by the theme, which means that it's just a lot of, like, really good Southern home cooking.
Cool.
There are vegetarian options as well. I don't have the menu right in front of me, but I know that, like, the dessert is this, like, what is it? Like a honey caramelized bread pudding thing. There's some succotash, which as a Southerner I should have had before, but I haven't. But basically you just take a bunch of vegetables and then put a ton of butter on them.
And that is something I do a lot.
Oh, yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the vegetables are there to give you the illusion of healthiness, and that's most Southern food. It's like, yeah, it's deep fried, but it is a green bean mm-hmm. deep down. There's son of a bitch stew.
Good.
Yeah, which I know that the meat version has bison in it.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, he really took the, like, frontier thing and ran with it in a way that sounds amazing. And as I said, there's a vegetarian version. I'm sorry, even though that's relevant to y'all, I don't remember what it is.
That's okay. Yeah, okay. No worries. I remember that when the last Feed we did, because I was vegan then too. What they were very solid. Very
yeah,
solid.
Yeah. No, because I was in the audience for that and like it was great. It was a very like very thoroughly satisfying vegan food experience.
Yeah. Well, and I know because it's especially because some of the other performers are Jewish like me, and we'll be going through Passover. So, you know, it's like the vegetarian option is great for us.
Nice. Cool.
You know, there's stuff that we can eat as well.
Nice.
That's great.
I love that. That was an interesting thing. We sing at a Lutheran church, and the pastor asked us about Lent. And I was like, yeah, I like super don't know what to give up for Lent because like I'm vegan. So like I could give up food at all. Like and that's kind of where like maybe next time I'll like actually think about like, I don't know, a thing that's not a food item. But like that's just an interesting, that's such an interesting
thing. You could have given up like sugar.
Oh, no.
So hard, though. And especially
it's
like,
a thing to
it's
give
not
up.
About giving up things that you care about.
Yeah.
You're like, what do I have once a week that I could just not?
Right.
This one time when I was a kid, I gave up potatoes for Lent.
Oh, man. Wow.
That was rough.
We have a friend who's ketogenic.
I did it, too.
Yeah, we have a friend who's ketogenic, so she doesn't eat any starch. Any starch. So, like,
wow.
No rice, no potato, no bread. And she doesn't eat, I don't know if this is all, I think this is all ketogenics, right?
Yeah.
And she doesn't eat any sugars.
What does she eat? Just
meat
lettuce?
And lettuce.
Meat
yeah.
and lettuce and like cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, if cheese is there, then like you can still survive.
Right.
Yeah, I have a couple friends who are keto and like.
A lot of cauliflower.
Yeah, a lot of cauliflower. But my friend who's keto, who's also like trying to bulk up. He, like, eats, like, bacon and eggs for breakfast and then goes and works out and then eats an entire rotisserie chicken for lunch. And then
I like
we'll
how
have,
you leaned in for that.
Yeah. And then we'll have, like, some kind of vegetarian dinner. But, like, an entire rotisserie chicken for lunch.
Well, and I, yeah.
Yeah, that's, like, when you see those, like, pictures of, like, what does The Rock eat?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like, good for you.
I mean, some people love that. The thing that's super interesting is then trying to figure out vegan ketogenic stuff, which is mostly cauliflower. But that's
just eat so much cauliflower.
Yeah,
really messes with your gut.
Well, I love cauliflower. I love doing cauliflower buffalo wings. That's one of my favorite things. Well, because when you okay. roast cauliflower, yeah. it kind of has that kind of like tendony thing to it, which is fun. Anyway, we have a few minutes left.
Oh.
I know that, like, we've just been just, like, chatting about food for the last few minutes.
I do want to make sure that we've hit all the bases. Is there anything that we have not discussed?
Let's see. I'm just going to scroll through my list here.
You bet.
So we got Frontier Feminist happening at 3031 North Rockwell, April 7th. That's next Saturday. I guess where you can get tickets.
Oh, and something of importance to poor people.
Oh, yes. And discounts. Because I need those, too. So the website for tickets is feed.brownpapertickets.com. And then, so our ticket discount thing is a little bit weird because we're doing, it's not one single discount code for all tickets. So it's going to be CHINOW, CHINOW, 1, or CHINOW, 2, CHINOW, 3, CHINOW, 4. So if one of those doesn't work, just try another number, 1 through 9.
And if the 1 through 9 are filled up, they can, like, email or something.
Yeah,
right?
let me know. You can just email me. So that's harrahdf@gmail.com.
Cool.
And I will find a way to get you a discount. I will get you a discount. I won't just try.
Nice. Good.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
But that's just so we can keep track of exactly what's happening, or I don't know. I don't do the ticket information. I just provide the
made sure that there is one that's cool though. Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, yeah. I mean, the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1 minute plug, and that was a good one. Is there anything else that you want to shout out or mention, or you can hit the address again?
Oh, you know what? I should also say we have some amazing performers. So Alana Goldstein, Onella Pliadelacque. Sorry, Onella. I love you, but I also have trouble with your last name. Sun Chang and Sarah Crowell, they'll all be performing. And if you know them, you know they're amazing. And if you don't, then you should come and hear them because they're great. And yeah, just come hear some amazing works by women. It's Barbara Harbach, Libby Larson, Judith Cloud, and Lori Laitman.
Dope.
Amazing. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. You can find all of our podcast articles there.
Podcast articles.
Yeah, we have some sweet bonus content for anyone that's interested in hearing me completely fuck up the beginning of this podcast episode. Just momentously fuck it up. Anyway, we have podcast episodes and articles. They're all on our website, scopymag.com. We spelled that S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. Also on our site, something I haven't mentioned before, if you want to sign up for our newsletter, we don't really send them out regularly, but when there's this has been a really interesting week, we'll send out an email. So check that out. You can sign up by being on the site for the first time. It works by IP address, right, Mo?
Yeah, so if you have never been to our site before, first of all, what are you waiting for? Second of all, when you go there, you'll be prompted in a very friendly manner to sign up to our newsletter. I think
you'll be jumped.
I think it starts with, "Hey fam, sign up for our newsletter or join our mailing list or something." So, we're not annoying about it.
Yeah, we just it's what I'd want to be emailed about.
We use it to talk about if we've been infiltrated by Nazis. We also email about cool fun.
Has that happened?
Yeah. Yes.
We can talk about it after the show because we've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah.
But we can. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
But we sometimes we're offered free stuff that we can give away to our listeners. And Facebook eats all of our stuff, and so. Announcing it on Facebook doesn't really work, so...
Yeah, and spits it out in requests for advertising money.
Yeah, exactly. But, so what we do is we generally just, email our mailing list with free things. So, you should be on our mailing list if you want stuff for free.
Cool, yes. Great. You can also find us on social media. We have a really dope Facebook group called Sounding Board. We're really proud of it. It's a really great space. A lot of fun chat about things, including astrology and other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fun space. Otherwise, you can find us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is called Scopy Magazine. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopy Mag, and we spell that S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. You can also find us on all the podcast places under Scopy Radio. I've been mentioning on the last couple episodes that if our podcast is not in your podcast place, please shoot me a message because I could use the nudge. That is always helpful, and I'll make sure to get it set up. Cool.
Great. I have two donation things to plug. First of all, we have an ongoing fundraiser for the Resurrection Project. We are trying to raise $500 for the Resurrection Project. What that means is that we want 50 people to donate $10. $500 for the Resurrection Project means that they can sponsor one DACA applicant's application fee.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a really big deal. Please do consider giving. I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations for us. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up until this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we could use a little bit more help. If you're in a position to give, you can head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our donate section. There are a couple ways that you can give. First of all, you can do a one-time donation. If you choose to do that, you will have our eternal gratitude. Otherwise, for as little as $5 a month, you can support our mission of uplifting local arts and independent media. If you're interested in advertising opportunities, please feel free to reach out to us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. I just want to say one thing real quick. If you're a person that's not pro Facebook, the Resurrection Project fundraiser is on Facebook. But if you want to send us it, a donation, we'll make sure it gets to the Resurrection Project. Or if you want to just donate to the Resurrection Project directly, you should do that too. That's something I wanted to... We'll mention it on the next couple episodes that we're doing it for folks that aren't. If you're not on Facebook and know about our podcast, that's really cool. And like, let me know that so I can help other people find us that aren't on Facebook. Anyway, cool. Sorry. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson. No, isn't that not? That's not the ending thing. I'm really sorry. Go out and make something.
Yep.